ॐ विघ्नहर्तृणन्दस्य जनार्दनसुलकया चक्षुस्मिलितञ्जेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्थपितं जेन भूतले सायं प्रकटामयं ददति सपन्नन्तिकम् वंशकौपतुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च पतितनां पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। Quite an amazing circumstance with Indra, the king of heaven, fighting with Vritrasura. And he's cut off Vritrasura's right arm so that Vritrasura couldn't attack him with his club again. But then Indra has had his club knocked. He's had his, what's it, Indra's weapon? Thunderbolt, the Vajra, the thunderbolt. He's had it. Vritrasura had so much spirit. He picked up, although his hand was severed from his body, his arm, not even his hand, he picked up the club with his left hand and then hit Indra, and Indra dropped his thunderbolt, and there he was, feeling very helpless, like a failure, that his only hope in fighting this huge, powerful Vritrasura with his thunderbolt that was knocked from his hand, it seemed that he was going to lose. He was in a dangerous position. But then this Asura Vritrasura began to preach to him. He said that victory should not bring us jubilation, nor should defeat bring us moroseness. Why? Because in both cases, either in victory or in defeat, success or failure, what is going on actually? Is it us who's making the success? If it's me who's making the success, then yes, I should feel pride and jubilation. And if it's due to my own lack of my own inner power that brings me my failure, I should be feeling greatly minimized. But actually, neither success nor failure has anything to do with us. This is what Vritrasura is explaining. It has nothing to do with us at all. It has to do with two things, especially one of those two things. The first thing is the soul's karma. He is simply reaping the reactions for those acts performed in this and previous lives. Some people, they practice, they struggle, they use their full intelligence, great intelligence, and they end up a failure at whatever they do. And other people, the door of success just seems to open as they before they walk in, and someone seems to open it for them, and here it is. Some people, they're even born with success. You're born in a big family who knows everyone, who's so wealthy. This is all purva sanskar, previous material karma that makes someone a success or a failure. But ultimately, because we have unlimited karma behind us, we have, it's like we think we're walking ahead, and some of us feel like we're carrying a weight as we walk. But you know why we feel that heaviness? Because we are carrying a weight. There's a big bag of karma that we're carrying with us. And you know how big that bag is? It's mountains and mountains and mountains and mountains. No wonder we feel weighed down by it. Because how many lives have we passed? 10, 20, 30, 100, a billion? 200 billion? Anadiya bahimu. Krishna Bhure says, Jeev anadiya bahimu. Gata eva maya tare samsare luk. Unlimited lives, practically speaking. So we're carrying around unlimited karma. Because in one life, we may act and burn off some big boulders. But in the same life that we've thrown off some boulders of our karma by our suffering or enjoyment, we've also gained another big hill because we've done so many other things in this life. So we have so much karma. So it is ultimately up to the super soul to decide what karma out of the unlimited karma that we have due to us. It is up to the super soul to award the karma for a particular life. So ultimately, it is all in Krishna's hands. So vasya chaham ride sanavisto matir smitam jnanam aponam cha. He gives us the specific remembrances. He gives us specific knowledge, abilities. This is all the function of the super soul. So why then, if we're successful, Vitrasura is explaining, why then, if we're successful, should we be thrilled with, as if it's me who's done it? And then on the other hand, if we're a failure, why should we grieve, thinking that it is all due to me and I am useless? Actually, we are useless. But not in that sense. We're useless in the sense that we're tiny, insignificant, incomplete. It's actually in the purport, one of the purports we're going to read. Such interesting points on this. Anyway, we'll read text 13, continuing of these points. Are you Sri Kirtiraishvaryam, Vitrasura says, Ashisha Purushaya Purushasya Bhavantye Vihitatkale Yatani Chor Viparyaya? Just as a person not inclined to die, is there anyone more or less other than Vitrasura who's inclined to die? Very, very few people. Just as a person not inclined to die must nonetheless give up his longevity, opulence, fame, and everything else at the time of death, so at the appointed time of victory, one can gain all these when the Supreme Lord awards them by His mercy. Just as we give up that which we don't want to give up at the time of death, similarly, when it's the appointed time of our victory, we will not have a basket big enough to capture all the fruits that will fall. Prabhupada's purport. It is not good to be falsely puffed up, saying that by one's own effort, one has become opulent, learned, beautiful, and so on. All such good fortune is achieved through the mercy of the Lord. From another point of view, no one wants to die, and no one wants to be poor or ugly. Therefore, why does the living entity, against his will, receive such unwanted troubles? It is due to the mercy or chastisement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that one gains or loses everything material. No one is independent. Everyone is dependent on the mercy or chastisement of the Supreme Lord. There is a common saying in Bengal that the Lord has 10 hands. This means that He has control everywhere, in the 8 directions, up and down. If he wants to take everything away from us with his 10 hands, we cannot protect anything without 2 hands. Similarly, if he wants to bestow benedictions upon us with his 10 hands, we cannot factually receive them all with our 2 hands. In other words, the benedictions exceed our ambitions. But an interesting point that Prabhupada isn't mentioning here is that what is actually mercy and what is actually chastisement is not easy to tell, to distinguish. In the context Prabhupada's speaking here, he's talking about victory or opulence being mercy, and losing things, having things taken away, being chastisement. That's on a material level. But what about when Krishna takes everything away from us for the purpose of leaving us no alternative other than putting ourselves completely in his hands, surrendering to him and accepting his judgments on everything? He takes everything away at times, makes us completely dependent upon him, having nowhere to go, practically speaking, other than to him, calling out to him, accepting our situation as his grace. By taking everything away, is that chastisement or is that actual mercy? I've heard Prabhupada say on a tape that this is actually mercy. When Krishna is pleased with someone, he gives them so many things, but when he's really pleased, he takes everything from that person. So everyone will reject that person. And then the person won't have any false security in this world. False security, why false security? Because we tend to take shelter of things emotionally, physically, that really will let us down in the end. So Krishna kindly makes material reality at times very stark. Very stark. But actually we have no shelter in this world. But yet, we have him. But yet, again, our realization isn't deep enough to even call for him with a full heart. But yet, again, he takes everything away. So we have no other choice. So meekly we call out to him, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And then, by his grace, our call can get stronger, our surrender can get stronger, and his reciprocation will get stronger. And as we'll read in Canto 7, when Prahlad Maharaj, not in that consciousness, but in a consciousness of full dependent love on Krishna, he's completely dependent on him. And when his father Hiranyakashipu says, "Where is your God? You say he's everywhere. Is he everywhere?" "Yes." "Well, if he's everywhere, is he in this pillar?" And Prahlad looks, and Lanka Sringadev peeks out from the pillar to assure him, "Yes, not only am I everywhere, but being everywhere doesn't stop me from being a person. He's everywhere, but in a personal form." How wonderful. How inconceivably wonderful. So, Krishna, even when we call out meekly, and we don't have great strength when he's taken everything away, if he decides to give us that type of chastisement or that type of mercy, in his own gentle way, possibly that no one else can even detect, he lets us know that he's still there. He peeks out from something or another to let us know. So Prabhupada explains the conclusion of this purport. That Krishna is in control. That he is taking away, he is making us failures, he is making us victorious. The conclusion is that even though we do not wish to be separated from our possessions, sometimes the Lord forcibly takes them from us. And sometimes he showers such benedictions upon us that we are unable to receive them all. Therefore, either in opulence or in distress, we are not independent. Everything is dependent on the sweet will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Vitrasura continues, since everything is dependent on the Supreme Will, he's preaching to Indra in this way. The Asura preaching to the Deva, the Asura. Since everything is dependent on the Supreme Will of the Personality of Godhead, one should be equipoised in fame and defamation, victory and defeat, life and death. And what should be the equal position? What should the consciousness be like in this? Equipoise means without wavering. But if it's not wavering, it's fixed on one point. What is the one point that it's fixed on? Krishna, dependence on Krishna. That is called sharanagati or surrender. In their effects represented as happiness and distress, one should maintain oneself in equilibrium without anxiety. It's a very big test. But this is actually what Krishna consciousness means. So we should strongly aspire for this. We hear the philosophy. Sometimes it is said we hear the philosophy less to teach us and more to remind us of what we already know. So we should be reminded of this fact. In equilibrium, fixed on Krishna, but not only in equilibrium fixed on Krishna, but also without anxiety. Why without anxiety? Because we're putting ourselves in Krishna's hands, confident that what occurs will be His mercy, a combination of our karma, but given in such a way, our karma and His mercy, but that even that karma will be given in such a way that Krishna's benediction is hidden within it. Text 15. One who knows, Vishwashura continues, one who knows that the three qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are not qualities of the soul, but qualities of material nature, and who knows that the pure soul is simply an observer of the actions and reactions of these qualities, should be understood to be a liberated person. He is not bound by these qualities. Prabhupada's purport. So one should, this is what's going on all day. Passion, goodness, passion, ignorance, mixture, passion, goodness, ignorance, passion, two parts ignorance, three parts passion, one part goodness, four parts ignorance, depending upon the time of the day. Happiness comes up, misery comes up, dejection comes up, just the pushing, battling. This is just, we're thinking, oh, I'm happy or I'm miserable. But it's actually the modes of material nature fighting for existence. They're just pushing against each other. So one who doesn't identify with these qualities of the modes of material nature and is fixed on Krishna, he is a liberated person and he is free from the binding, the being tied by the qualities. Guna or qualities, guna means ropes as well as qualities because they tie us up. But one who doesn't identify with them, he is free. Prabhupada's purport. As the Lord explains in the Bhagavad Gita 18:54, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakankshati Samasabeshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. When one attains self-realization, the Brahma-Bhuta stage, one knows that whatever happens during his life is due to the contamination of the modes of material nature. The living being, the pure soul, has nothing to do with these modes. In the midst of the hurricane of the material world, everything changes very quickly. But if one remains silent and simply observes the actions and reactions of the hurricane, he is understood to be liberated. The real qualification of the liberated soul is that he remains Krishna conscious, undisturbed by the actions and reactions of the material energy. Such a liberated person is always jubilant. His mind is focused on Krishna, and he is jubilant despite all the upheavals and the causes of jubilation within the material world. He's fixed on Krishna. How can I serve you, Krishna? How could I please you, Krishna? He never laments or aspires for anything. Since everything is supplied by the Supreme Lord, the living entity, being fully dependent on him, should not protest or accept anything in terms of his personal sense gratification. So when things that are, that give us, make our life easier, or things that we're attached to come our way, then we get happy, feel relieved. But when things that we're attached to get taken away, or things that we don't like chase us and attack us, then we get miserable. Because the basic principle is that we're seeing everything, what's good and bad is defined as is what's pleasurable for me, and what's bad is what's not pleasurable for me. But a devotee, a liberated soul, he just sees everything is being supplied by Krishna, and he's fully dependent on him. He doesn't protest or accept anything in terms of his personal sense gratification. Rather, he should receive everything as the mercy of the Lord and remain steady in all circumstances. Clear? Yes. Easy? No. Hard? Yes. Impossible? Impossible if we try by our own power to do it, but if Krishna gives us some mercy, it's not impossible. So how to make ourselves receptive to Krishna's mercy? And Vishwasura, he's telling this to Indra, but look at his situation. He's lost his hand, he's lost his arm, and he's fighting on. So he can preach very strongly because his example is so powerful of detachment and being fixed. So he says, "Oh enemy, oh my enemy, look at me, just look at me. I have already been defeated, for my weapon and my arm have been cut to pieces. You have already overwhelmed me, but nonetheless, with a desire to kill you, I am trying my best to fight. I am not at all morose, even under such adverse conditions. Therefore, you should give up your moroseness and continue fighting." Purport. Vichushua was so great and powerful that in effect he was acting as the spiritual master of Indra. Now that is an art. The person who's attacking you, who's giving you the most trouble, to see that person as guru, that Krishna is acting through him to teach you. Try that one. That one has to be very equipoised and Krishna conscious. But actually that's reality. One will see Krishna everywhere. Yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pashyati tasyaham na pranashyami sachame na pranashyati. Or I think I mixed up two verses there. One is But for one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. Tasyaham sulabhaparta nitya yaktasya yoga. What's the beginning of that verse? Tasyaham, for a person who sees Krishna everywhere, for such a person, tasyaham, easy to obtain, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. He knew that he was going to be defeated by Indra, and he voluntarily accepted that. But since he was supposed to be Indra's enemy, he tried his best to kill Indra, dutifully. Thus he performed his duty. One should perform his duty under all circumstances, even though one may know what the result will be. In other words, even if one knows that the result is going to be unfavorable, one should still perform one's duty in Krishna consciousness for Krishna's pleasure. Vichasura continues. This is his less. O my enemy, consider this battle a gambling match in which our lives are the stakes. The arrows are the dice, and the animals acting as carriers are the game board. No one can understand who will be defeated and who will be victorious. It all depends on providence. Sukadev Goswami said, hearing the straightforward, instructive words of Vritrasura, King Indra praised him again and again, and he took the thunderbolt in his hand. Without bewilderment or duplicity, he then smiled and spoke to Vritrasura as follows. Indra said, O great demon, I see by your discrimination and endurance in devotional service, despite your dangerous position, that you are a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul and friend of everyone. There's two short purports there, we'll read them. King Indra, so Indra is recognizing Vritrasura as a great devotee. King Indra, the greatest of the demigods, was astonished to hear the instructions of Vritrasura, who was supposed to be a demon. He was struck with wonder that a demon could speak so intelligently. Then he remembered great devotees like Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, who had been born in the families of demons, and thus he came to his senses. Even so-called demons sometimes have exalted devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore Indra smiled reassuringly at Vritrasura. And the next purport, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 6:22, Yam labva chaparam labham manyate nadikam tata yasmin stito nadukena guru napi vachalyate. Established in Krishna consciousness, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. An unalloyed devotee is never disturbed by any kind of trying circumstance. What does unalloyed mean? What does unalloyed steel mean? Huh? Not mixed with any alloys, any other metals. Unalloyed devotee is one who is pure. His devotion is pure. It's not mixed with any other desire than to please Krishna. So an unalloyed devotee is never disturbed by any kind of trying circumstance. Indra was surprised to see that Vritrasura, undisturbed, was fixed in devotional service to the Lord. For such a mentality is impossible for a demon. However, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, anyone can become an exalted devotee. Striya vaishyastata sudras tepi yanti param gatim. An unalloyed devotee is sure to return home back to Godhead. Indra continued, you have surmounted the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, and because of this liberation, you're beyond Maya. Because of this, you have given up the demonic mentality and have attained the position of an exalted devotee. In Prabhupada's purport, we read about one third of the way in. Vichitrasura was considered a demon, but actually he was more qualified as a devotee or Mahapurusha. If one somehow becomes a devotee of the Supreme Lord, whatever his position, he can be brought to the position of a perfect person. This is possible if an unalloyed devotee tries to serve the Lord by delivering him in this way. Therefore, Sukadeva Goswami says in Srimad Bhagavatam, Kirat Hunandra Pulindra Bhokasa Vira Sumbha Yavana Kashadhaya Yenye Chapapayad Apashrayashraya Sudyanti Tasmai Prabhavishnave Nama. Kiratas, Hunas, Andras, Pulindas, Pokasas, Abiras, Sumbas, Yavanas, and members of the Kasha race, and even others addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. For He is the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. Anyone can be purified if he takes shelter of a pure devotee and molds his character according to the pure devotee's direction. Then even if one is Kirato, Andhra, Pulindo, whatever, he can be purified and elevated to the position of a Mahapurusha, a great devotee. 21. O Vichitrasura, demons are generally conducted by the mode of passion. Therefore, what a great wonder it is that although you are a demon, you have adopted the mentality of a devotee and have fixed your mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who is always situated in pure goodness. Prabhupada's purport. King Indra wondered how Vichitrasura could have been elevated to the position of an exalted devotee. As for Prahlad Maharaj, he was initiated by Narada Muni, and therefore it was possible for him to become a great devotee, although he was born in a family of demons. For Vichitrasura, however, Indra could not detect such causes. Therefore, he was struck with wonder that Vichitrasura was such an exalted devotee that he could fix his mind without deviation upon the lotus feet of Lord Krishna Vasudeva. Now, that question, how is it possible that Vichitrasura became such a great devotee? That question is the subject matter of not the next chapter, but the chapter following that, and that for approximately four until chapter 18. We'll hear how Vichitrasura became Vichitrasura. So we don't get the answer to that question right now, how he became a great devotee. A person fixed in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord Hari, the Lord of the highest auspiciousness, swims in the ocean of nectar. Swimming. Who likes swimming here? Yeah. How about swimming in an ocean of nectar? And absorbing it through your pores. All the nectar, the amrita, that makes one ecstatic in life and his existence, giving nourishment to the soul. A person fixed in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord, Hari, the Lord of the highest auspiciousness, swims in the ocean of nectar. For him, one who is swimming in an ocean of nectar, what is the use of the water in small ditches? Now, what a comparison. Swimming in the ocean of nectar, or swimming in the water in a small ditch. Doesn't make swimming in the water of the small ditch of our own plans and desire is very attractive, sound very attractive, does it? Vichitrasura has formally prayed, as Prabhupada's purport, 6.11.25, na na kapristam na cha paramishtam na sarvabhaumam na risadipatyam. I do not want the facilities for happiness on Brahmaloka, Swargaloka, or even Dhruvaloka, not to speak of this earth or the lower planets. I simply want to return home, back to Godhead. This is the determination of a pure devotee. He doesn't want anything in the material world, whether it be low or high. He simply wants to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Srimati Radharani, the gopis, Krishna's father and mother, Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda, Krishna's friends and Krishna's servants. That is actually tatra loyam apimuyam ekalam. That is actually the price of attaining the lotus feet of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, that one simply has to want it very, very, very much and nothing else. He wants to associate with Krishna's atmosphere of Vrindavan's beauty. These are the highest ambitions of a devotee of Krishna. Devotees of Lord Vishnu may aspire for a position in Vaikuntha Loka, but a devotee of Krishna never aspires even for the facilities of Vaikuntha. He wants to return to Goloka Vrindavan and associate with Lord Krishna in his eternal pastimes. Any material happiness is like water in a ditch, whereas the spiritual happiness eternally enjoyed in the spiritual world is like an ocean of nectar in which a devotee wants to swim. That's actually what is the famous book written by Rupa Goswami called? Yes, and what's the Sanskrit? Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. Sindhu means ocean. Amrita, nectar. Bhakti Ras, the ocean of the nectar, the nectarian ocean of the association, of the sweet tasting of the mellow of association with Krishna in bhakti and love. So Bhakti Ras, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Sukadeva Goswami said, so now all the Vritrasura has spoken, now Indra has replied acknowledging Vritrasura's position, and now the battle will continue. Sukadeva Goswami said, Vritrasura and King Indra spoke about devotional service even on the battlefield, and then as a matter of duty they again began fighting. My dear king, both of them were great fighters and were equally powerful. O Maharaj Prickett, Vritrasura, who was completely able to subdue his enemy, took his iron club, whirled it around, aimed it at Indra, and then threw it at him with his left hand. His right hand was cut off. With his thunderbolt named Shaktaparvan, Indra simultaneously cut to pieces Vritrasura's club and his remaining hand. Vritrasura, bleeding profusely, now he didn't have two arms. His two arms cut off at their roots looked very beautiful, like a flying mountain whose wings have been cut to pieces by Indra. Vritrasura was very powerful in physical strength and influence. He placed his lower jaw on the ground and his upper jaw in the sky. His mouth became very deep, like the sky itself, and his tongue resembled a large serpent. With his fearful, death-like teeth, he seemed to be trying to devour the entire universe. Thus assuming a gigantic body, the great demon Vritrasura shook even the mountains and began crushing the surface of the earth with his legs, as if he were the Himalayas walking about. He came before Indra and swallowed him and Aravata, his elephant carrier, just as a big python might swallow an elephant. When the demigods, along with Brahma and other Prajapatis and other great saintly persons, saw that Indra had been swallowed by the demon, they became very morose. Alas, they lamented, what a calamity! What a calamity! The protective armor of Narayan, which Indra possessed, was identical with Narayan himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Protected by that armor and by his own mystic power, King Indra, although swallowed by Vritrasura, did not die within that demon's belly. With his thunderbolt, King Indra, who was also extremely powerful, pierced through Vritrasura's abdomen and came out. And Indra, the killer of the demon Bala, then immediately cut off Vritrasura's head, which was as high as the peak of a mountain. Although the thunderbolt revolved around Vritrasura's neck with great speed, separating his head from his body took one complete year, 360 days, the time in which the sun, moon, and other luminaries complete a northern and southern journey. Then at the suitable time for Vritrasura to be killed, his head fell to the ground. When Vritrasura was killed, the Gandharvas and Siddhas in the heavenly planets beat kettle drums in jubilation. With Vedic hymns, they celebrated the prowess of Indra, the killer of Vritrasura, praising Indra and showering flowers upon him with great pleasure. O King Parikit, subduer of enemies, the living spark then came forth from Vritrasura's body and returned home back to Godhead, while all the demigods looked on. He entered the transcendental world to become an associate of Lord Shankarshan. Here's Prabhupada's purport, the final purport in this chapter. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Indra, not Vritrasura, was actually killed. He says that when Vritrasura swallowed King Indra and his carrier, the elephant, he thought, "Now I have killed Indra, and therefore there is no more need of fighting. Now let me return home, back to Godhead." Thus he stopped all his bodily activities and became situated in trance. Taking advantage of the silence of Vritrasura's body, Indra pierced the demon's abdomen, and because of Vritrasura's trance, Indra was able to come out. Now, Vritrasura was in yoga samadhi, and therefore, although King Indra wanted to cut his throat, the demon's neck was so stiff that Indra's thunderbolt took 360 days to cut it to pieces. Actually, it was the body left by Vritrasura that was cut to pieces by Indra. Vritrasura himself was not killed. In his original consciousness, Vritrasura returned home, back to Godhead, to become an associate of Lord Shankarshan. Here the word aloka means the transcendental world, Vaikuntha Loka, where Shankarshan eternally resides. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Vritrasura's Glorious Death. So next, chapter 13, I think we'll make our attempt to read the entire chapter tomorrow, and then on next Wednesday, if Krishna allows, we shall begin the pastime of Chitraketu, which in the end will go to 17, chapter 17, and in the end we'll get the full understanding of how Vritrasura was a great devotee. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Shiva Raman.
I have two questions. One is just in that last purport. Is it that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying that in effect Vritrasura left with his own accord, he wasn't actually killed by it?
And also that he, from that point, and also from the point that he attained eternal life in Vaikuntha. It's not exactly clear how Indra was killed, except that he was swallowed by him. And in Vritrasura's mind, he was killed. So it's maybe possibly looking at it from the point of view of Vritrasura. Indra was killed and he was alive, and he had his eternal life. And also Indra was still trapped in somewhat his Sakam devotion. You had a second?
The other point was what Vritrasura said on the battlefield, you seem to say that everything's dependent on personality of God, and one should be equipoised. And then the last comment you made is just consider this battle like a gambling match. That kind of, I was thinking that one in a gambling match is not equipoised.
Right.
It was an interesting.
But one in a gambling match doesn't know who's going to win, and what, and when, if one takes some dice or something and throws it, how is it determined what it lands on and who wins? So this is, he's saying it's providence, and providence is another name for fate, and fate is another name for Devi or Krishna. So we don't know who's going to win. But let's do our duty and depend on Krishna and accept and not be eager for the winning or the losing, but to dutifully do our duty to please Him and leave the results to Him. Mm-hmm. I would say that's the basic level of this, of the teachings of Vichasura at this point.
An idea of not feeling bad if you fail, not feeling related if you're successful. Sometimes it seems that people can be irresponsible and people not feel bad.
Right. But
so is that sort of recommended?
Well, see, what, in other words, what's recommended is there's two things. On one side is don't make the center of your existence what's pleasing or displeasing to you. And that is described as attachment or to success or failure or the, like that. But if one is detached from everything and his center is still himself and his own pleasure, then it's the same. It's on the same level. So the real point is we should transfer the attachment or the center to Krishna. That's what, and then be detached from the results. Be acting to please Krishna and then be detached from the results. That's the ultimate point that's given. But there's a type of niskam karma, an impersonal type of niskam karma or detached action, that one isn't attached to Krishna, but one is just detached from the fruit of one's work, leaving everything to fate. And that also has a certain power to it. It has a certain power to it, and it can free one from reactions to some degree, but it's not Krishna consciousness. But people who are irresponsible or tend to be not dutiful also. And in nishkam karma, one is dutiful but detached from the results. So there's different levels of this. So when one is dutiful and doing the right thing because it is the right thing, then there's no reactions that actually come to that, because one's center isn't oneself, but is doing the right thing, which are prescribed duties, and the duties are prescribed by Krishna. So it's a little indirect in that way. If one is attached to Krishna, then it's direct. But to be attached or detached, superficially detached in the material world, just trying to protect oneself from anxiety, still one's selfish self is the center, and there's reactions for that and irresponsibility. Is that?
So, which one of those things was he recommending?
He was actually speaking more on the, externally, he was speaking more on the level of dutiful actions. And detach. Ma palesu kadachana. Karma eva dakadaste ma palesu kadachana. But actually, he was thinking, as he explained before, he was actually thinking of Shankarshan inside. So he was acting for his pleasure. So he was talking on the level of detached, just detached, dutiful action. But actually he was acting and thinking on the level of devotion. That's what it seems.
That comes out later when you hear out
before.
Who he is?
No, it came out before too. What he wanted when the last time he was preaching to Indra, he was saying, "You can kill me, I'll just think of the Lord, no problem."
But I mean, when you hear how he got his position.
Yeah, then it becomes really clear. Yes. So sometimes Prabhupada's purports inform us of what's ahead to make it very clear what's going on internally with him. But actually it's earlier also. In the previous chapter. Alan, did you have a...
Yeah, why is it that when demons die, they then retain their natural form of like 9 miles long? How come they don't get struck out in their life? 9 miles.
How come they don't what?
How come they don't strut about? You know?
Strut about 9 miles
really
long.
Really big. Because if you're a big
like Vitrashur was doing that.
Yeah, but when he died, he became this huge form.
No, he was already in that huge form. He had attained that.
Sounded like.
No, it didn't. I was reading it. I know.
But you know when.
Agasura and Putana. No, Putana.
Oh, well, Putana couldn't reach. She had to disguise herself.
Yeah.
You can't have a conversation with someone 9 miles wide.
Yeah, and have them strutting about.
That's so funny.
I just watched him in Godzilla movies when I was younger. I really enjoyed it.
I
don't know
if
they'll
learn
voice. Does that answer your question?
It just sounded like an air.
No, before he died, he assumed this huge form and swallowed Indra. Uh-huh. And then...
I thought he was dying at that point.
No, no.
Was
no, he was like that, but he was still on his feet, even though he didn't have his arms. He had his legs. Uh-huh. He was strutting about. Stepping on things. There's an incredible picture of that. You'd like it. Did you see that picture? Oh, could it be? It's not in this one, it's in it. Yeah. Bring that over here. Oh, this is. Oh. Yeah. Let's see. There's more, there's two, right. Oh, that's even a, yeah, right. Have that one. Yeah. And this one, they're both here. Look at this. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. It's a big demon.
Struggling about.
He's quite dead at this point. He's gone for eternal life. Any other questions? Yes.
Who was the demon mother?
One that Indra killed, but I don't know any more than that. Anyone know? You know who the demon Bala is? Maybe Sahasra knows. No, Sahasra doesn't know. Okay. So tomorrow, another exciting chapter. And then Chitraketu. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.